You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Those of you who don't know, this is John Bon Jovi. I have this picture of the gunner in his IROC Camaro blowing through some small village in Scotland or England, blaring it. Tell me if you did that, yes or no?
No. Why did I just hear myself?
I haven't changed anything, so.
Okay.
You may have the speaker.
There. No, it's good. I don't hear myself.
All right. That wasn't you and your. Did your Camaro have T tops on?
My Camaro didn't last very long, dude. I mean.
It didn't?
Okay. I bought it in Virginia when I graduated school.
Okay.
Marine Corps Security Forces, that thing. And then I drove it from Virginia to San Diego. And then maybe a couple weeks later, I drove it from San Diego to Long Beach because it was going by ship.
Right.
Packed it away. Yeah. I got on a plane a couple days later, flew to England.
Yep.
About a month later, my car arrives in England. I had it maybe a year. Maybe a year, and then some Brit bought it for me.
Did you make good money on it?
Shit, yeah.
Was that a did you get bonus to? Did you re-enlist to go to security forces? Was that a bonus?
I re-enlisted. I wanted England, and so remember you said. You know, I always thought shit. When you ever put down on your paper, it's what you got. Cause that's what my life was about. You know, like, people always said to me.
Explain the paper thing.
Well, it's like, whenever you get choices, they always say, put your top three choices. And people would say, they're going to give you the third choice. So just always put your number one choice as your third choice. And you're like, whatever. So I had always put my number one choice as my number one choice, and I always got it. So I never understood why people had such a problem. They're like, because my first, you know, I first came in, I was going to go to barracks duty in Charleston, nuclear, you know, do nukes.
Right.
So I was going through the nuke program. I had all my blues and boot camp. I was pretty cool. So I was in that program. And then as soon as I was getting ready to graduate ITS, they closed down Charleston and was like, oh, okay. You guys are going to do you want to go to another barracks duty or do you want to go to the fleet? And I was like, shit, man, I'm an infantryman now. I want to go to the fleet. So I went just down the road, 1-1. I mean, like a short bus ride. And there was only like two of us on that bus. Everybody else went off to barracks duty. So I go to 1-1.
The whole bus.
That's what I wanted. I just like, yeah, I'll go to the fleet. I'll go, you know, go to 1-1.
A whole bus for two dudes.
Yeah, a whole bus. Drake Clark was his name.
Was the other guy?
Drake and I get off.
Was the other guy on the bus?
Clark?
Yeah.
It was me and Clark. And then, so we're on the bus. We get down there to 1-1. We check in. And then, so I did my tour. I did, you know, two deployments in 1-1, two Westpacs. And then, now I'm a seasoned, salty corporal.
War dog.
Got fleet type on my belt.
Yeah.
And then all the guys that I knew that went on barracks duty were coming back were all corporals too. The difference was I've been in the fleet. These guys have no credibility whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know? So they're, you know, and I'm leaving the fleet now. I'm like, hey, boot, go on, you know, enjoy your Westpac as a corporal, boot. You know, because those guys had a tough time, and they check in, they'd be a corporal, you know, the lowest level of authority, but still, now you're authority, you know. You're supposed to be making things happen as a corporal.
Right.
You check in, and, you know, they walk in, and you're like, and some lance corporal's like, hey, who's the new guy? And you're like, oh, it's Corporal Musselman. Yeah, shut up. You know, you're like, and you see his PFC or lance corporal town you're at, and you're like, dude, I got 2 service stripes. I'm a lance corporal. With 2 hash marks. Boom, boom. They do the 2 fingers on the wrist, you know, like to denote. I'm salty, dude. They're like, you've been in 8 years and all you got was lance corporal? 3 times I put on lance corporal.
I've been promoted.
Major corporal,
I've been
lance corporal. Major sergeant.
Yeah, I've been promoted corporal. Like, what, 7 different times?
Yeah, 9 times. Yeah. Promoted 9 times and he's still a lance corporal. People look at you like, what? I made it to sergeant twice.
This is no bullshit either. And the poor guys that came off, like sea duty and barracks duty, they were good Marines. That's how they got selected. But they didn't know the way of the fleet. And
if they were
not socially cool guys, if they were kind of dorks, a lot of them got ate up because they didn't adjust.
Unless
very well.
They came in, if the barracks duty they came in off. Like, unloaded, like, a few guys. So if you came in with, like, 3 or 4 of your buddies from Berks City, yeah, you were good to go. But if you came in alone, man, you checked in the entire battalion, and you're like, hey, where are you from, Corporal? I'm from Kings Bay, Georgia. What Marine base is in Kings Bay? There's a Navy base. Why are Marines at a Navy base? Regarding nuclear weapons. Oh, you're one of those guys.
Those guys.
You're a rat. You're a weasel. You're going to rat on us. You know, because you had to stay squeaky clean to stay on the PRP program.
Right.
So I got to 1-1, and it was like, hey, I'm going to re-enlist. Where do you want to go? I was like, well, and I don't know where I saw it, man. I was like, I want to go to Newquay, England. And they're like, just put that on there. So I put Newquay, England, whatever the MCC, the code for that was.
Right.
And I put that on my reenlistment. I didn't put anything else. And then they came back and said, yeah, okay, you're good to go.
You had 1 choice on there?
Yeah, I only had 1 choice.
Nice.
And then even when I went to Security Force Supervisors course in Virginia, because I was an NCO, right?
Right.
So I went through FAST, you know, you go through all the FAST companies just coming out, so you go through all that training. And then you go through this, like, course. And then you go through the supervisor course. And I'm looking at these other NCOs, and I'm like, hey, where are you guys going? And they go, oh, no one knows yet, man. You don't get assigned until you're done with the course. I'm like, what? And I'm looking at everybody like, are you serious? Are you guys? They're like, yeah, you don't get assigned until you get done with the course, man. They don't do that shit. I'm like, I'm going to Newquay, England. Yeah, right, dude. I'm like, all right, I'm going to Newquay, England. And so they're like, graduating, you know, they're a Corporal Musselman, Marine Barracks, Newquay, England. And I'm like, oh, look at that, guys. I'm a freaking crystal ball. I'm a, you know, like, you idiots. You guys are idiots. Idiots. I'm surrounded by idiots.
See, that's always a little bit different. Oh, Mike Musselman. Just a little bit different.
Then I get to Newquay, England. And Newquay, England was the only time I didn't get to choose because the war kicked off.
What do you mean?
I was trying to get to the war, you know, because my time was up. I mean, I was like, I've been there for 3 years. The war is kicking off, and I'm like, oh, I got to go get me some of this.
I got to have some of that. Got to have some of that war.
Yeah, I got to have some of this war, and then but I got to do it up from the West Coast. I can't do it from the East Coast. So I'm like, hey, where do you want to go? And I said, 5th Marines. I'm going to go with the 5th Marine Regiment. Already been in the 1st. Now I'll go to the 5th. And they're like, all right. Plus, I want to wear that Forge, you know?
That looks cool. It does look cool.
That's cool.
With pictures.
6 dig it.
Yeah,
it's CDI good. Factor.
6 dig it.
So I'm like, I'm going to 5th Marines. Let's go to 5th Marines. And then the war kicks off. And before I even blink, I'm like traveling. I leave London. By the time I land in Norfolk, I get down there. I'm like, man. They're like, hey, man, haven't you heard? I'm like, what? War's over.
What?
I'm like, what? I just left when they invaded London. Yeah, I had a layover, but what do you mean the war's over? Yeah, war's over, man. They're done.
If I'm en route, do I still rate the ribbon?
Yeah, I'm like, what? And they're like, but But lucky deal for you, you're going to a combat replacement company for 2-8. And I'm like, because I realized when the numbers end in 8, that's the shit coast. When they land on the east, the odds, 1-5-7, that's the good coast. 9, because 9th Marines were still there. You know, odd, good, even, no. So I was like, okay, no, I'm not going to that. And they're like, yeah, you got orders, man. I'm like, shit. So next day I'm in the club. Bam. Who do I run into? An old buddy of mine. Now he's a captain, though. And he was a Dragon's platoon commander when I was in 81s, in 1-1. And we start to talk. And we're sitting in the little bar there, the little Devil Dog Club above the barracks at Norfolk. And he's like, hey, where are you going? I said, 2-8. He's like, oh. And he goes, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to get back to the West Coast.
That's how you get to the Kitty Hawk.
Yeah, and he's like, well, hey, man, I got a deal for you. And I said, what? And he goes, I could cancel your orders, and I can send you – I need to start a Mardet. That's his job. He's got to start a Mardet, Marine Detachment. I said, USS Kitty Hawk. He goes, dude, it's going to be a one-year gig for you. He's like, you know, because you've already been on barracks duty for 3, so you've done this thing, and you just float around. And he's like, the best deal about it right now, it's in dry dock in Philadelphia. I send you up there now, you know, 4 or 5 months from now, finally they put her in the water. I'm like, sign me up.
Just working it.
Let's go.
Working it.
They changed my orders. I'm driving up to Norfolk. I don't even fly.
What kind of car
do you from Norfolk, I drive up there.
What did you buy when you got back?
I bought, I think it was just like some little sports car, a little, like an Alfa Romeo or something.
What? That's
pretty cool. Yeah. Little spider.
You were kind of a cosmopolitan, kind of a playboy kind of a guy.
I was a metro guy, yeah. I was a metrosexual kind of playboy. Yeah. I was still single.
Big hair. Looking for that Forger.
No, I didn't have big hair. I had short hair.
Looking for that Forger. Nice. That Forger looks good when you don't have too many ribbons.
And, you know, you put a little product in your hair. Yeah. You get a little gelled up. It looks freaking sweet. So I'm driving up. I get up there, and that's where that whole story is. I check in my blues, and there's sparks coming off the ship. And I'm like, hey, talk to some civilian. I'm looking for the Marine detachment. And they're like, brother, there ain't no Marines on this boat. And there ain't even sailors. The sailors live in that building over there. So I walk over there, and there's a sailor, and I'm like, hey, where's the Marines? And they're like, I don't know. You're the first one I've seen. And that's that whole, because I was a sergeant, and this is like, now I'm a department head as a sergeant, and I get to, like, design the living quarters.
Were you,
and they come to me with the plans.
Were you the first enlisted guy of the detachment?
I was the very first Marine.
Holy
shit. So the is captain there a, checks in next,
is there a plaque?
And they tell the captain, hey, your first sergeant's over here. And he's like, oh, cool. So he runs into me, and I'm like, hey, Captain, how you doing? Sergeant Musselman. He's like, hey, Sergeant, we're talking. He goes, I'm like, man, it's great to see another face around here. He goes, yeah. He goes, well, there's a first sergeant here. And I said, what? Really? Let's go find him. So we spent like the half the day looking for this first sergeant. And we run into this Navy guy, and the captain goes, hey, where's this first sergeant you're talking about? He goes, like, he's right there. He pointed at me. And I'm like, what? I said, I never said I was the first sergeant. He goes, no, you were the first sergeant to check in. And we both look at each other like,
we're stupid.
Oh, God. We're screwed. But this guy's from Philly. He lived in South Philly. His parents live in South Philly. So I go meet his parents. We're instant friends. I'm over holidays. Me and him get be really good buddies.
You're living the life.
Start checking in. And now we got to play Marine again.
That's
so now we're best buddies. We're going out. We're double dating.
What?
We're having a blast. Oh, yeah, man.
Fraternization. You can't do that.
Not when there's only two of you.
Mike, let me tell you. Mike is a specialist in fraternization. If there was a fraternization MOS and career path, Mike would be the king of it. He would teach the course. All right, boys, here's how you do it.
I never crossed the line, Mac, and you knew that. And you knew that.
No, but he would be,
you and I,
how would you
and
describe,
a lot of other people.
How would you describe your relationship with the line? Very intimate, yes.
Extremely professional. Meaning, we would joke, like even Dave. I mean, when we were out smoking cigars or sitting in his office, it was, you know, Mike, Dave, whatever. We were all bullshit, right? You did it too. We would get there and call each other out, you know, in that inner circle. Not everybody. We're just talking about the trusted few.
Right.
But then as soon as we walked out of that environment and we're back now into the regular Marine Corps, yes, sir. Yes, Colonel. What would you, you know, and it was all professional.
That's a fact.
We never crossed the line ever. Maybe they're like, hey, man, we're friends. You don't do that to, you know, no. And you and I have gotten in huge arguments professionally, you know, and then evening we're going out to dinner or we're driving around in trucks laughing at other people. And people didn't understand that. And you, I, and there were certain guys. Rudy got better at it. Because pilots are weird. Pilots always personal, you know. It's like, oh, dude, you're yelling at me. We're best buddies. But after a while, they're kind of like. But Luke was that way. Montana Luke, man was perfect at it.
Luke was more respectable than we were, though.
Luke was always Mr. Respectable. Yeah, he was our indicator, like our mark, you know, like we look, like, you know that mark that says, do not go across the street, the water is up right here, because you will die?
Yeah.
That's Luke. Luke's that sign.
Yeah, he's.
So we always look at Luke, and that he's our judge, like, ooh, shit, I can't see Luke anymore, I gotta stop.
Yeah. He's under the desk laughing. He's under the desk, yeah, he's under the desk laughing. He thinks it's funny, but he would never go there.
Right.
Where we might cozy up to that line.
We might touch our toes in it, but exactly. That's about it.
Exactly.
I want to feel. I want to know how hot that lava is. I'm not gonna actually touch it, but I'm gonna get awfully close, and I may stick something in it. Luke, on the other hand, he just knows it's hot, and he just stays away.
Yeah, he would not go there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What?
Well, maybe with lava he would, but you know the analogy.
Yeah. So, how fired up are you? Red Sox defeat the Yankees in Yankee Stadium.
Dude, and you know, and I stayed off that. What was Montana man? Does he not realize what probation means?
No, he didn't. You know, I don't think he gets it.
He doesn't get to come across like that. Like,
he doesn't get it. He doesn't. Even if he wasn't on probation, one of the things we don't do is we don't taunt each other. While our teams are competing, and it's primarily the Red Sox Yankees, we tend not to, we don't taunt each other because all of us hate it. Like, I don't like when they're playing, I'm a fan. Mike's a fan. You know, hey, unless you want me to tell you to fuck off, right? Which I don't really want to do. I mean, I'll do it, but just leave that alone. Don't go there. But I think he's lonely. Honestly, I think he's lonely. I think that's it.
Well, you shouldn't have moved to Montana.
It's a good, we all make decisions in life. I think he's lonely. So I think
I didn't jump in there.
Kind of a cry for help.
Like the Bueller thing that I'm like, who uses Bueller anymore?
he said,
what the WTF is going on in Yankee Stadium?
Yeah, two nights.
Question mark, exclamation, points.
Yeah, two nights in a row. So he's just looking for attention.
You know what's going on. They won. Take it with some grace.
Yeah, no, but it's Red Sox Yankees, so you can't.
Dude, it's still nail biter though.
Oh no, I mean, Sanchez hit that ball in the bottom of the ninth inning.
No. Not talking about the game.
Oh,
I'm
not
talking
the game?
About the series. Yeah, okay. Now they go on. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
But I mean, now it just gets even more of like.
Yeah, Houston's good. I think Houston's the best team in baseball.
I think you're right.
Well, I think they have the best starting pitching. Their one and two guys have been incredible. Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole. I mean, they annihilated. Who did they play in the first round? Cleveland. And Cleveland's a good baseball team. They crushed them. So it's gonna be great. In fact, probably the two best teams are playing in this series. I think both Milwaukee, the Dodgers are underneath the Reds.
You think it's Dodgers?
What's that?
You think Dodgers?
Dodgers. I think the Dodgers, I don't know who, I don't watch the National League enough. To me, the Dodgers are kind of fragile. I don't know why. When I watch them, I don't see them, you know, I don't see them crushing. You know, I don't see them. They seem to have an identity crisis. Some games you'll see that they seem to be good, and other games say, I think they're like the Yankees. They're not ready to be winners yet. They're not mentally hard enough. And Milwaukee has been really good, so I don't.
Is
but
it
I don't
okay
want
for me to root for Boston on the 14th.
On the what?
On the 14th.
What's the 14th?
That's when Boston and the Astros.
Go oh, when they play, yeah, you can root for anybody you want to.
Oh. Man, I might break out because the weather's cool. I might just go all out and put on the onesie.
Why don't you go to one of the games?
With the onesie?
Well, it is.
No,
it is Texas.
First of all, Houston.
It is Texas, dude. You might want to be careful with that.
Houston, okay, is a it's less painful for me to drive to Kansas City. It's quicker, actually, for me to drive to Kansas City than it is Houston.
But you want to see the Red Sox play, don't you? Or not?
Yeah, but then I got to go into Houston, and Houston is
you were just there.
Shit liberal crazy, dude. That place is crazy down there.
You were just there though. What, a month ago?
Yeah. Well, no, I was up by Nacogdoches, by Lufkin.
That is how far north of Houston, an hour?
That's like halfway. I was halfway.
Halfway to Houston. That's where your
so Lufkin,
uncle?
Nacogdoches sits above, or so you know, like Dallas, Tyler, as you're going east towards Shreveport, and then you drop down from Tyler, you go through Nacogdoches, and then you enter Lufkin, and then you go all the way down. If you go from Lufkin, you go all the way into Houston.
Got it. Got it. And that was your, was it your uncle that passed away?
Yeah.
Who? Your uncle. Your mom's brother? Your dad's brother?
My mom's brother.
Your mom's brother. All right. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of going to the opposing ballpark and getting all geared up. That's like asking for abuse.
Yeah. So Price is pitching for Boston.
Yes.
Yeah. Cole is pitching for Houston, so they're coming out with the heavy big guns, man.
Yeah, he was arguably he set a playoff record, struck out 12, walked nobody. Yeah, he pitched in Pittsburgh, and he's better in Houston. And
he's a West Coast boy.
Yeah,
born there in Newport Beach, right next to you, and then went to UCLA, right?
UCLA guy. In fact, listen to this. Gerrit Cole and Trevor Bauer, who pitches for the Indians, both pitched at UCLA, and they did not win the NCAA World Series.
Right.
If you can imagine
now
that.
Now look at them.
If you can imagine that. Yeah, they're both pretty good. So, yeah, David Price, you know, David Price, I mean, it's a painful story because he's been such a great pitcher. He's 0-10, I think, now, or 0-11 in postseason play. And it's like, God, you know, at some point, but, you know, he doesn't win in the postseason. So he's got a – I saw Pedro Martinez. So I like listening to Pedro Martinez. He's funny. I think he's on TBS when they do the broadcast. But he was talking about David Price. He says, you know, he's got to blow up the way he pitches. He's got to change it. Because in the playoffs, you know, everything's better. And, you know, you can do it, get away with certain things in the regular season that you cannot get away with in the postseason. And he's got to, whatever his approach has been, he's got to change it. He's got to do something different. So it's kind of interesting listening to Pedro Martinez talk about him. Pedro Martinez, a big Red Sox fan, obviously, pitched and won World Series with the Red Sox. And so, and a great pitcher for them. So he's really interesting to listen to talk about the game. So I enjoy listening to him. But yeah, he said David Price. He said, you know, he's got to go up and down more than he goes inside and outside, which is kind of interesting. So we'll see. Yeah, but that and then number two, they have Verlander going against Sale. Two is Verlander and Sale.
Right.
Yeah. So Verlander, He hadn't lost in the postseason, and this is the second straight year he hasn't lost. So, and he's been dominant. So, Sale's good, But he struggled. You know, he was injured, and then he pitched well against the Yankees in the game that they won. First game in Boston, that Boston won 5-4. And I think he left in, what, the seventh inning or something. He had given up two runs or one run, something like that. So he pitched well. And so no, the Red Sox are going to have it cut out for him, I think. I think that Houston, and it's because of their starting pitching. The other thing, I don't know if I mentioned this to Mike, but I didn't realize Houston's Achilles heel last year was their bullpen. They have the number one bullpen in baseball right now. I did not know that. So it'll
be. Houston's going to be a team. If Sox can pull out Houston, brother, give them the freaking trophy.
Just hand it to them.
Yeah.
Just hand it to them after that.
That'll be the test, man.
But they are. If you look at most rankings in baseball, the top two teams are the Astros and the Red Sox.
And the Red Sox.
Yeah, so that should get the World Series trophy. Then you got to go play the little brother and see what that happens.
Go appease the National League.
Right.
Let them feel equal.
It's interesting, the World Series, because I'm not sure how they're doing who has home field this year, but you know, either three or four of those games get played without the designated hitter. And that's significant because for the Red Sox, it'll mean that the center fielder, Jackie Bradley, won't play, right? Martinez will go to right field, Mike? Is that what he plays? And then Mookie Betts goes to center field when they play National League teams. So, no, exciting. If you're a baseball fan, a great time of the year. Great time of the year. And so if you're a Red Sox fan, this is the big series. If you win this, then you should win the World Series. So, nail-biting time. What do you do during, hold on. I have a few equipment questions, and then we'll come back to baseball. This advanced night vision goggle is headed to the Army and the Marine units sooner than you think. An as-yet-identified unit will be the first on Earth to field an advanced binocular night vision goggle that incorporates day-night optics and thermal targeting capabilities all in one package by this time next year. Are you familiar what we're talking about? I think you are.
No.
You're not?
I'd have to look at it. They change so much. They change like every 6 months.
The Enhanced Night Vision Goggle Binocular, or ENVG, TAC Bravo, will be fielded to Army units starting next fall through 2021. Question. Why are these things fielded as monoculars?
Because it's got, you both eyes look in, and then it goes to a one lens. So monocular into binocular vision. Okay. They just call it that way. It's a one lens system instead of a binocular system. So you have two lenses converging. You have one lens, takes in the information, converges it to two.
Got it.
And like our seven Bravos, right?
Got it.
They're called monocular goggles, but they're actually at two receptacles.
And this has both thermal and what do we call that? Passive light amplification system. It has both those systems, yes?
Yeah, so it's a convergence of I square and thermal. So it's a converged system. So what they do is they overlap the image because, you know, thermal can't see through glass. It reflects off of water, and I square has its limitations too of depth and everything else. But then, you know, with the white phosphorus I square stuff now, they can actually see better quality, so they converge the images together.
There you have it, folks.
So it's weird. It takes some time to get used to. And it freaking hurts. You know, after a while, you can't be on that shit for too long because it's a lot of information, you know, coming into the brain at once. And here's that. And this is one of the problems that they're not really scoping right now. They're talked about it and they got it in there, but it's not within the parameters as far as you can't test it. Meaning, in its saturation information, too much information. What does that do to your brain? they realized this with pilots with that new helmet system when it came out with the Apache, you know, the look that, you know, every time they look, the gun looks, and then all the information is being fed to the eye. Right. I mean, the problem with that, too, is over time, you know, what kind of damage is being done to your brain?
Well, let me ask you this. Is it any different than having, you know, a lot of, like, you see traders on the, that do securities, and they have these screens in front of them, and you might see them have a stack of like six screens to display all the data, and we would look at it and go, I mean, what do you even see in that? Is it different than that because it's fed so closely into the eye, or is it the same? For instance, I would look at it and go, wow, that's overwhelming. And a trader would look at it and say, no, look here, it's all there. Is it the same? That it takes an extended period of time for your brain to know what to look at when it looks at it? Is that? Or
no.
Is it different?
It's the process of overlying, you know, because so now you're seeing something that it's not, it doesn't look normal, so it's very hard to process that information and to actually fuse it into one, so and pull the information out there of what you're actually seeing. So it takes some time. It's that fuse technology.
What's it, Mike? What's it look like? I mean, because for a lot of people, we'll be familiar with the ANPVS goggles, right?
Everything looks just like it.
Everything was green. So
exactly. In a lot of cases, it's two. They add one more gathering lens. It's just so you'll on the front end it maybe have two lenses, one that got black and one that looks more like a camera lens. And what they do is it brings in the two images and then fuses it into one inside and then brings it out like that. So you're talking about I2. Whenever you talk about I2, it's I2. Goggles.
What are the two eyes stand for?
Thermal ball. Here we go. Right here. Oh. I'll tell you in a second. So yeah, this is it. This is the old system. This is right. Maybe it is the old system. So it's the PSQ-20. Is that what you're talking about?
ENVG.
Yeah, the ENPSQ-20.
This says ENVG.
ENVG is the advanced. It stands, you know, it just
dash Bravo.
No, well, the ENVG is enhanced night vision goggle. That's what ENVG stands for.
Right.
So it's the PSQ-20 or the PSQ-20 Bravo. Because there's no way they got the PSQ-36.
The LT but, Insight technology.
So it's Insight. Yeah. So it's two lenses. The top lens that you see there is thermal gathering. The bottom lens is I square. That looks ridiculously big, though. Oh, the counterweight for that is going to. Oh, there it is. There's the counterweight. I'm looking right at it.
Explain the counterweight to people.
The counterweight, because it's so heavy in the front, it's going to pull your neck down. So you put the battery pack in the back of your head that weighs considerably, you know, less, but still enough where it pulls the helmet back.
Balances
so it alleviates
right.
That the problem
on your neck.
Yeah, so there you see images of thermal overlay with, that's an old one though. I don't know why they're going to green. So the green, see the green tint, like the old one? The new ones would be white phosphorus.
Got it. So you have the two lenses, and then there's a third lens kind of above them in the center, and that lens is the thermal layer?
Yeah, thermal and light gathering.
Got it. All right. Wow. That's awesome, though. That's awesome. You know, I love that we've at least got to the phase where we've said, look, everybody doesn't need this kind of gear. Some people do. I think that's a mature, finally, it's a mature position that, look, if you're going to go in harm's way, if you're going to make your living closing with the enemy, You need better gear, and we can provide that for you, and we're going to get over that. Oh, everybody has to have this because somebody's mom yelled about it. So I think that's good. I think that's important.
So, yeah, when you're talking, I mean, they should be on, like, Gen 7. You know, when Gen 3's hit, Gen 3 was, that was a huge jump. Gen 3 was like the PVS 7. You know, that was freaking huge. And then Gen 4 came out, and then that stuff really started to modernize, you know, what it could do. And that was your PVS 22s. That was the Universal Night Sight, the UNS, they called it, or the NVS 22, I think it was. And that's another specialized type. Then when they got into auto gating.
Explain that.
Changed auto gating, auto gating was designed for aviator goggles. So, more suitable for aviation goggles. And that's because, and I'm trying to make it so not so nerdy, but it talks about it's reducing the cycle of the photocathode tube from the image that it's taking in. So it reduces that duty cycle, and so you can actually look at things like the screen outside, and you don't get washout. So the goggles became better. And then later on when they started coming into like a panoramic where they could use four lenses, that's what you saw like in the SEALs use. They have four lenses that combine into two. So four tubes. So your field of view is now, you know, much wider, 170 degrees or 180 degrees,
right,
which is huge. So you can see much more because before you're looking through a tube. And so you open up with a panoramic is you open up more field of view, right? So you basically you're doubling all that stuff. And I say 170, it's not like that. It's more like about like 100. But still more than, you know, 17, which if you're looking through one through. And then you go through all of that stuff. So I think I-square came around, the word I-square was image intensifier. So when you talk about, without going into, again, great detail, we're talking about photons moving through, you know, this is where understand what photons, electrons, and neutrons do with light and how you release them and how, you know, you can... Now you don't have to cool the plates down to actually to get the photons. Anyway, now you're going to get me all nerded out. And I don't want to go there because that can take
you're,
hours.
You're already there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
But, yeah,
this is the technology that goes to the battlefield, right? And you see it first. When it's first produced,
my job was to define how to best use it.
It's big and unwieldy when it's first produced.
It's a dork looking thing.
Right. And as it gets refined, it gets smaller and smaller and smaller, you begin to see, you know, the applications increase and its utility increase to the military.
Oh, yeah. And so now they got ones that have algorithms built into them. So they're looking for images and shapes and they assign shapes to it. So even if a person, a human being is, neutrally temperaturally, you know, buoyant. So he's within the temperature, you know, degrees of what they're looking for. So he kind of hides. There's two times in the night, you know, where the heat of this morning sun and or the coolness of the day matches the outside temperature, matches the ground. So those two cycles during the day, it's hard to find things. Thermal or even I square, but now with these computer algorithms, it assigns shapes to what it's looking for, and so it's much easier to see humans because they got this like outline that's been assigned to them, and it's like a little image, a little human being, a little wire image, and it's freaking cool.
There you have it.
Yeah. I used to work a lot with a lot of the night vision guys, and it, you know, helped a bunch of the night vision thermal and I square come to the plate, you know, as far as working with those engineers and refining what their capabilities were or what they could do, and then, or repackaging it. Because again, that was my job. My job was to find something, how this widget fit into everything else. So it's a layer. You know, it's like a transparency. When you put, if you were to draw one line on a clear transparency and lay it down, it's just a line. But if you draw multiple lines in different patterns on multiple pieces of transparency and you lay them down, you get an image. Wow. My job was to make that image. Take all of those pieces of transparency paper that have the different lines on them and try and create an image. You know, that laser, that rifle, that person, that optic, this piece of gear, that piece of comm gear, that thing flying above our head, this pole that I'm going to scrape the ground with, you know, whatever it was, all of this stuff combined to make the person more capable, not more lethal, but more capable, to give him more tools, you know? So that's why... It's kind of like I get to play MacGyver and get paid for it.
In a lot of different ways, Mike had a cool job. And then his personality, he's able to leverage that job into even cooler than it is by its own definition. And by its own definition, it's a cool job. The Pentagon announced today it's grounding the entire fleet of F-35s.
What?
The U.S. You explain this. The U.S. services and international partners have temporarily suspended F-35 flight operations while the enterprise conducts fleet-wide inspections of a fuel tube within the engine of all F-35 aircraft. If suspect fuel tubes are installed, the part will be removed and replaced. If known good fuel tubes are already installed, then the aircraft will be returned to flight status. Inspections are expected to be completed within the next 12 to 24 hours. Explain the memo that goes out that units will receive, Mike.
What? Just not to do anything? Freeze in place?
Well, there'll be very technical. There'll be a very technical memo that goes out that talks about the tube that's suspect, right? If you have this tube with this DSN, right? And so they'll give all the specifics of the part that's suspect. And then, but if you have this one, this one, this one, this one, these are all good to go, blah, 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 notify it. You're grounded until this is resolved. Once you begin the resolutions, report those numbers to your parent command, blah, 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 blah. So it's very specific to a certain part. And then they go out, and the mechanics go out and check it, and double check it, and make sure that whatever they found is significant in terms of a defect for them to do this. But normally, it doesn't stop things for very long as people check on them and parts get replaced and things like that. Next thing, Commandant of the Marine Corps said that the MUs are going to get their fire teams plussed up here shortly. On Wednesday, the Commandant.
Great.
On Wednesday, the Commandant of the Marine Corps announced that rifle squads that have been reduced from 13 to 12 Marines will have 3 additional Marines added to them, and we'll start with the MUs because they are forward deployed, according to the Commandant. Said the Defense Writers Group breakfast on Wednesday. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, so Mike and I talked about this, that, you know, the Commandant had to buy other people. And so the compromise was...
Zero-sum game.
Exactly. The compromise was we'll give up grunts until we find the money and the path to replacing grunts, because we can make those in a relatively short period of time.
And we're team players.
One team, one time.
Infantry guys are team players, man. We know that the Marine Corps is about the infantry. But we're willing to play in the team. Whereas, you know, you look at the infantry, look at the numbers in World War II of the actual Marines, you know, 550,000 Marines, right?
Right.
The proportion of those guys that actually were triggered pullers, it was like up in the 80%. Today, it's completely real role reversal.
Yeah, inverted.
Yeah, 20%. So it's 80% support, 20% doers.
Right. Pretty amazing, you know? When you look at the tooth to tail ratio. The tail is big.
I was a tooth my whole life. I was an incisor. I was the
Whoa.
Part that like bit into you and held on to you.
Wow.
You know, some other people were teeth, but they were like the molars, the grinds,
and
stuff. Like our tankers and artillery guys, they're the grindy, the molars. But the infantry guys were the front leading teeth. We're like those four teeth and then the two fangs.
Yeah, hey, that's the truth.
Bite, take that first initial bite out of you, and then all that teeth after that, that's the rest of the guys, tankers, artillery guys. They get to chew them up.
The here's a current events question for you.
Yeah.
Much has been made about this dude that went to the in Turkey, that went into the Saudi
embassy, that, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the Turks allege that Saudi intelligence service dudes rolled in there and then chopped him up, killed him and chopped him up.
Yep.
My question is, this happens all the time in those countries, Mike. It's not like oh, somebody went missing.
Yes.
Let's let's stop the presses. Like,
if the prince is,
why is this a big deal?
If the prince of Saudi Arabia or the king is listening right now, right now,
and they do,
right, and if they're listening, listen, guys, quit playing around. Just say, yeah, we whacked that dude. Talk bad about our country, and you'll be next. Any other questions? I'll take questions now. Are you confirming that you killed the journalist who was speaking bad about your country? Yes. No further questions. Admit it. Why? Yeah, we killed him. We whacked him. Where did you kill him? Inside here. You want to come in inside and see it? No. It's fine. I mean, why are, you know, we want to impose sanctions on Saudi Arabia? Yeah, right. Sure.
I just don't. What
you
I
know
don't,
what?
I don't
Watch
get
them
it.
Impose sanctions on us.
I don't
That's
get
called
it.
Oil.
Look, the Turks staged a phony coup so that guy could increase his control over his country. And the Turks do this shit all the time. And it's like, now
they're playing
like,
with fire, man. They got that guy in the crosshairs.
We can't. Hey,
the Turks got him killed.
This is like somebody got snatched and got killed in the Middle East.
I don't get why they hide this stuff.
Why do we have our panties in a bunch about it? Like,
because
look.
This is one of those. I saw Rachel a little bit last night. She was like
Rachel
and that Maddow. You know
what?
I know. Every once in a while, I got to make sure I'm still tracking what the crazies are doing.
Whoa!
So Rachel Maddow was talking last night. She was like, and President Trump, because everything is President Trump. You know, even if she got in a car accident, she'd come into work and go, hey, I blame this on President Trump. I listened to the radio, and I got so upset that I had to hit this person. You know, so it's President Trump's fault. But anyway, she's like, President Trump, we're going to wait for the White House, which probably not going to do anything. But, you know, the White House, because they're all chummy chum chum with the Saudis. I'm like, yeah, and you know who else was chummy chum chum with the Saudis? Frickin' Obama. They used to probably read parts of the Quran together.
He was chum 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 with everybody. The Russians,
yeah, he's,
the
shit,
Chinese.
He was chum 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 with, you name it.
Everybody. Well,
so don't sit there and say that Trump is chummy chum chum. I mean, so Rachel, let me explain something to you. What sanctions do you want to impose on Saudi Arabia for them whacking a dude that was set up in the first place, that was speaking ill of their country, it was inciting, you know, riots and that kind of shit, and people to do stuff. So they whack somebody, because we've done this before, right? it's usually a small plane crash somewhere out in the middle of Wyoming. So no one really notices it. But we whack people, they whack people, but what's the big deal? It's just because it's a slow news grind. We got to find something to pin on, to the executive branch of government.
Well, the Kavanaugh hearings are over.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
You see the news?
The hearings are over.
I know, but it's not over.
Well, that'll never be over. Like,
no, because the Anita Hill thing was over as soon as Clarence got in. But this whole bashing and this whole mob. The mob things cracked me up when, a conservative now on TV, when he says, Ted Cruz was attacked by a mob. Oh, come on, mob. You guys are being outlandish. That was not a mob.
It was more than
15 people. It was a group.
What would you call it? Yeah. No.
That was exercising their rights.
It's gross. It's gross.
Like,
the way they slice it and dice it.
What about the right? Here, if you read the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Where do you tie that kind of behavior? Is that your pursuit of happiness?
Yeah,
that's
going
to make you happy?
Yeah, but don't I have a law? If I'm not bothering anybody, don't I have the right to live my life in peace without
you have
coming
right
and
to pursue
like
right
like
and
telling me that I can't be here and running me out of places? Don't I have that right?
And it's our job to make sure that our government provides that. And it's also our duty. If they stop, it's our job to change it.
What do you mean?
That's our job. Well, you can take that however you want, but it's our job.
What does that mean?
Our job is to make sure that we maintain that. Once they stop providing that for us, then we go get it back.
Stop hitting your desk. There's restaurants in D.C. that are now hiring security people, so those things don't happen to them.
but that's ridiculous.
Interestingly enough. Now, there's.
We do look, that. If we do that to them, oh, for crying out loud, it's a mob.
Right. Oh, no, there'd be hell to pay.
It'd be KKK.
When
we have white people come together, that's a freaking Klan.
That's a Klan thing. I know.
Here's
a question. The head of Interpol has gone missing in China.
What? Why is he traveling to China in the first place?
He's Chinese.
Well, then, shit. Okay.
He's the head of Interpol, though, and he's...
Maybe he's not missing. He just doesn't want to answer the phone. Kind of like when I retired. I didn't go missing.
I
just changed my phone number.
He's missing.
Yeah. Well, good on him. There's some kind of response.
Why aren't our panties in a bunch about the Chinese yoking up some dude that is the head of an international police organization?
Some risk associated. If you are the head of Interpol, someone should have told you when you took that job that, hey, this is just one out there, but there may be a chance one day you go missing.
Well, the Chinese said that we're not really sure where he is, but his name has been mentioned in a corruption investigation.
Yeah. So, hey, because I know we're getting late, but hey, I want to talk about this tomorrow. Are we talking gun talk tomorrow?
Well, it's largely dependent on you. I hate to spring gun talk on you because
no, I want to talk gun talk tomorrow.
Okay.
What are you talking? Accessorizing.
Ooh. That's always sexy. Everybody loves accessories.
Yeah. But I want to talk about
what are we accessorizing?
Accessorizing, because I talked about this before in the past, was Magpul.
Right. They're in the news. The Marine Corps wants a better pouch for their Magpul magazine.
Yeah, no. But and they'll provide it. I mean, that's the way they do it. Magpul is kind of like they take things and they make it better.
You like Magpul. They're like Glock.
Well, I love my favorites, Surefire, Magpul, LaRue, so those type of Glock, yeah.
Glock.
And Magpul, just so you guys know, Magpul's got some of the coolest clothes like ball wear that's coming out. They always got like the trucker hats. They got a new hat I saw today. I'm gonna go get it. It's like the 1950s. It's almost like a, and if my buddy was listening right now, he'd probably send me a text and say like, hey, it's this, because that's where they got their inspiration. But it's like post-apocalyptic, like the 1950s signs. I can't think of it, but it's like a post-apocalyptic. But it says Magpul in cursive writing, kind of like, you know, come to this, like the old Route 66 signs, you know, that type of genre to it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
They're very in with the style. So, yeah. And I'll talk about accessorizing. We could talk about, because they're really come a long way. They don't make just magazines anymore. Dude, they're.
So we're going to talk about apparel, too?
We're going to talk about apparel.
Whoa.
Like slings. We're going to talk about slings. And we're going to talk about apparel. And what kind of, you don't want to buy 5'11 and goofy shit like that. You don't want to look goofy.
Well, 5'11 makes some pretty good stuff, though, yes.
I mean, they do, but you don't want to look too goofy.
He's a Marine, too, I think. Foreign Marine.
Who?
5'11 guy.
I think they all are. I know.
Devlin?
Kirkpatrick from Magpul. Yeah, they were.
Tom Devlin? 5'11 guy.
Yeah, but firearm accessories, man, they're all over the place.
Do you know Paul Lebedine?
Yes, I know Paul Lebedine.
Okay.
General Lebedine?
General Lebedine. Well, you never call anybody general. It's just like Larry, Joe,
Paul,
Eric.
Well, I knew Paul when he was a cop. Dave. When he was still, you know, because he was still a reservist. I knew him when he was a San Diego PD cop. Paul. Yeah, I knew all those guys, man. Actually, I'll never tell the truth about this story, but, you know, Paul and I went to a bar in San Diego when he was still a cop. And it was,
you could stop right there.
Freaking crazy.
You could stop right there. No, he and Devlin are friends.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so, I sent Tom Devlin an email and said, hey, why don't you come on the program? And after Lebedine asked me if I knew him, I said, I don't. And he said, well, let me introduce you guys. And I talked to him. He said, I'd love to come on your program. He's created a pretty successful company, 5'11". And so it'd be cool to hear him talk about what he thinks makes guys successful and how he did it and whatnot. So,
yeah.
So anyway, so we're going to talk fashion.
Interesting. We're going to talk fashion. We're going to talk accessorizing. We're going to talk about, like, you know, the gear.
Okay.
Right. And why the gear is important, because
we're going to do that tomorrow.
It goes back to, you can buy a great gun, but if you get cheap shit for it, you got a cheap piece of shit.
Yeah. And you also have to look good when you're rolling around, too. You can't look stupid. And there's an art to that. Looking solid, not looking stupid. Because if you look stupid, the first thing everybody says is, who's that? Who's MacGyver over there? Who's not so much MacGyver? I got a phone call at 5:30 this morning.
I didn't call you.
I know. From the 910 area code. So it's North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at it like, well, maybe it's Furness calling me from a phone. I don't know. Hello? Dr. McNamara?
What?
So what do you say to that, Mike? So somebody says,
I say, yes, speaking.
That's what I said.
I seriously would.
Yes. That's what I said. Yes. This is Staff Sergeant Nielsen from the 2nd Marine Division Comptroller's Office. Yes. I know you're coming back here to speak, and so we need to work out some details about, you know, about this. And I said, hey, Staff Sergeant. He said, I hope I didn't wake you. I said, no, I'm always up at fucking 5:30 in the morning waiting for phone calls. He says, oh, you're on the West Coast. Yeah, I am, as opposed to the East-West Coast. I'm like, what did you get out of boot camp like 4 months ago? How'd you make rank so fast? Yeah, I said, come on, man. Don't you look up, like, time zones on phones and stuff like that?
Right. So,
sorry, sir, do you want me to call back? No. I'm awake now. We got to talk. We got to do business. So, anyway. Yeah, 5:30. Moral of the story? Always say yes when somebody asks you if you're a doctor.
Yeah, but, dude, I would have ran with that.
Do not be afraid to go there.
I'm never afraid. That, you know me. Someone mm-hmm. calls me, I'm definitely, yes, this is Dr. Musselman speaking. What can I help you with?
We used to have a phone number that was a digit away from the animal shelter in San Diego. And we used to have all kinds of fun with that.
Yeah.
Is this the animal shelter? Yes, ma'am, it is. How much are shots for my parakeet? $437 as of the last time I checked, which was yesterday, ma'am. What?
Why so much?
Why so much? Well, the serums are very expensive. They come from exotic parts of the world. Oh, my God. It was a comedy show. Comedy show. Yeah. People misdialing the animal shelter. You could have, like, all kinds of... Do you have cheetahs? Of course we have cheetahs. We're the animal shelter. We have them, like, how many cheetahs you got? Hold on, let me... And you're, like, your roommate sitting on the couch next to you. Hold on, let me let you talk to our cheetah guy. Then you handle the phone. Hello? Hello? Are you the cheetah guy?
Hello?
Yes.
I wish people would call like that more often.
Yes, I am. How much for a cheetah? Cheetah's $2,000 today. What? Yes. I mean, just stupid shit like that. You get off the phone, you're laughing hysterically. The poor people that call. But
you know what? It makes their day, too. Because yeah. They're like, once they figure out they've been duped, then they're like, oh, my God. Then they tell stories. Oh.
The moral of the story is, like, how did he get Dr. McNamara, though? Like, where? Like, I didn't, like, I cared.
Why not? Like, that sounds cool. Why not?
Why not? All right, what else you got going today?
That's about it. Like I said, tomorrow we'll talk gun talk.
Gun talk and accessorizing and
I'm telling you. They got some cool shit.
Let me tell you. You're talking,
I'm ordering this Logger shirt.
Right let me tell you, if there was ever a guy who was going to be a model, right, a runway model for Marine Corps gear, he's on the other end of this Skype line. Okay.
Well, not only does this shirt look good if you're wearing cowboy boots walking around town, if you had to throw your body armor on and a baseball cap and grab your M4 out the back.
Thank you.
This thing would look super stylish.
Exactly. That's the kind of review that you would get.
And how many times when you review, they're reviewing it and what they're showing you is the articulation of going to the presentation of your handgun. And they notice that how easy it is to articulate your arm movement. These shirts are made for shooting guns. Not only stylish, but you're also a lethal component in society.
Hey, let me ask you a military history question. Were the Army Rangers, when they were created, during World mm-hmm. War II, I think is when they were created.
1775.
The Rangers?
Rogers
War?
Rangers. Yeah. Rogers Rangers.
How long?
Revolutionary War.
So the Rangers have been around?
Since Rogers Rangers, the Revolutionary War. Yeah. Look up Rogers Rangers. Tells you the whole story of them.
Hmm.
Yeah, they wore green. That was cool. Yeah, they fought.
Were like Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys and all that kind of stuff.
Rogers orders are still in effect today.
For them. They do some cool stuff.
Well, we do it too. We still use a lot of Rogers Rangers rules. But that's a great story about Rogers Rangers.
The Ranger Regiment traces its lineage to 3 of 6 battalions raised during World War II, and the 5307th composite unit provisional known as Merrill's Marauders. I read about them when I was in school, and then the reflagged 475th Infantry, later known as the 75th Infantry. See, I remember reading this. I remember interviewing this guy, one of my most favorite interviews I've ever done. He was with the Rangers when they went up the cliffs at Pointe du Hoc in France at Normandy. And I want to say when he told me who that he was, I said Harris, his name's Harris, Mike, Harris Holman from Hatton, North Dakota, with the Norwegian, yeah, that talking like that shit. And then he says in the interview, he goes, you know, back then I used to speak with the broken Norwegian. Like, you're laughing your ass. I'm like, it's still, I don't mean to wreck your day, but it's still pretty thick there, Harris. But I want to say he said, I was with the 75th Infantry Regiment. He didn't say Ranger when he said that to me. I was just curious about if they referred to themselves as Rangers in World War II, or if they called themselves the 75th Infantry Regiment.
Well, they just say the regiment.
Yeah.
Or the regiment.
Yeah, I was curious about that, because I don't remember him saying Rangers. I remember him saying the 75th Infantry Regiment.
If you read... from Rogers Rangers, Robert Ranger, Major Robert Rogers. But if you read his stuff, you know, it's like stuff that's funny because, you know, same thing. When you camp, when we camp, half the party stays awake while the other half sleeps. These are rules that he wrote down back in 1770, you know, in the Revolutionary War. Don't ever take a chance you don't have to. When we march single file, far enough apart so no one shot goes through two men. Have your musket clean as whistle, hatchet scoured, 60 rounds powder and ball, and be ready to march in a minute's warning. Don't cross a river at a regular ford. Don't sleep beyond dawn. Dawn's when the French and Indians attack. You know, don't sit down to eat without posting sentries. Every night you'll be told where to meet if surrounded by a superior force. I mean, his shit just makes sense back then, right, and still today.
Still today. The
19 rules, the standing Rogers, standing orders of Rogers.
You know, they have a thing they do, which is called, is it Ranger Week, Mike, where they go down to, and again, yeah, what we're
Best
talking
Ranger.
About is, yeah, they, in fact, it was interesting talking to the guy I had on. Pretty cool. These guys are all former Rangers. They started a website called The Freak, and FREQ, as in frequency. And they're doing real good content. For instance, there's an article on there now about the Federalist Papers. So they're not doing clickbait journalism. They're doing substantive stuff. So pretty cool stuff. So they got in touch with me, so I had him on. But he was talking about Ranger Week or something like that. And he said, you know, in fact, he made an interesting point. He said, you know, Ranger School is a leadership school within the Army, okay? Mm-hmm. The path to becoming a Ranger is you have to go through the Ranger Accession Course, which is 8 weeks. The first 4 weeks is them trying to get you to drop. The second 4 weeks is them trying to get you to drop, but doing some training in there that you'll use. So, and he said that's the path to going to a Ranger one of the Ranger battalions. He said, and that is, you know, Ranger school, you know, Army-wide school is difficult. Our accession course is more difficult than that. And I said, do you have any females in the Ranger as a platoon? And he said, not to my understanding, no. Interesting.
Well, they were the first to put girls in there, though. That's
really, well, they went through the school, but they didn't go through the they didn't go through the accession course.
Well, they didn't go through RASP. Yeah,
exactly. And so there's a difference. So the Army's content to let them go through the Ranger school. Like, yeah, you can get your Ranger tab, and you can go through the Army leadership course. But to become a Ranger, you got to go do this.
Yeah, that was the BS. They had to go through RASP. They skipped RASP, 8 weeks of RASP to get into Ranger.
Yeah, but so the deal is these they're not serving in Ranger units.
I know, but they got the Ranger tab.
They got the Ranger school tab, but they can't wear. Which shoulder is the one that when you're serving the unit you wear it on?
I think you can. Well, your tab you wear on your left.
Yeah. If you served in the active unit, it's the Army's got all these other weird rules, but if you served in the unit, like you wore it on your right, and if you just went to the school, you wore it on your left or some shit like that. So
it's confusing.
They got a lot of shit to put on uniforms, man. To get an Army uniform ready, that's like a 3-day event. They've got a lot of shit. So anyway, just
only 3 tabs can be worn at one time. How many tabs can you wear in the Marine Corps? Zero, pal. You know why? Because Marines are special to begin with.
We don't have them. We're fighting to get to the 5th Marines Marine Regiment so we can wear a 4SJ to fill up some of that open space on our uniform.
Yeah. All right, man.
Good. All right. Have a good one.
So gun talk tomorrow.
Gun and fashion talk premieres.
Yeah. Dang it, dude.
Kanye West at the White House.
Right now?
Yeah. Making America great.
One day at a time. All right, talk later.
Later. Talk, here he is, right here.
We're going to need to get a few breaks to be able to have some places in my hometown of Chicago and the 2.7 million to the 9 million surrounding suburbs where we can create some factories. Now, I think it would be cool for them to be Trump factories because he's a master of industry. He's a builder. And I think it would be cool to have Yeezy Ideation Centers, which would be a mix of education that empowers people and gives them modern information. Like, sometimes people say, this kid has ADD, this kid has ADD. He don't have ADD. School is boring. It was boring. It's not as exciting as this. We have to make it more. He don't have ADD. School is boring. It was boring. It's not as
exciting. Kanye West from the Oval Office.
We have to mix curriculums. You play basketball while you're doing math. You learn about music while you meditate in the morning. We have to instate mental health and art programs back into the city. So those are, and also Larry Hoover is an example of a man that was turning his life around. As soon as he tried to turn his life around, they hit him with 6 life sentences. So I believe you say don't tear down the statues. Larry Hoover is a living statue. He's a beacon for us that needs to see his family, that needs to go out and represent. When you have a block leader on every single block,
Kanye West, man, in the Oval Office, holding school.
We need to put curriculums for people who really came from the street.
And he's not taking a breath, so the president who's sitting there can't jump in.
System or prison system that applies to what people are really going through, which Jim Brown has created.
What about gun violence with all the debate about the Second Amendment going on?
The problem is illegal guns. Illegal guns is the problem. Not legal guns. We have the right to bear arms.
President Trump has said that he favors stomp and frisk. Are you guys going to be discussing that? Do you think you can change his mind?
Yes, we're going to discuss. I didn't mean to put you on blast like that, bro. But it's definitely.
I'm open minded. I'm here.
Yeah. I am open minded.
He can speak at one of your rallies.
He can speak for me anytime he wants. He's been a great guy. He's smart cookie. Yeah. Smart. He gets it. Yeah. These two guys, Jim Brown, he's been doing this for a long time.
Is this a future presidential candidate?
Could very well be.
Only after.
Could very well be. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
We have a good. And the thing is, let's stop worrying about the future. All we really have is today. We just have today. Over and over and over again, the eternal return, the hero's journey. And Trump is on his hero's journey.
Unbelievable. And people hated the Kanye West. Right, is a Donald Trump guy. They hate it.
Black people have an issue with the word again. And I believe my feeling from that is because I'm going to go all the way Sigmund West, because time is a myth. All we have is now, all we have is today. So the word again, it doesn't hurt us because of the idea of racism and slavery. It hurts us because we need to focus on who we are now, today.
Interesting stuff. Kanye West at the White House and with Jim Brown sitting next to him. Pretty interesting stuff. Trust me, you'll hear about that. That'll do it. Don't touch that dial. Interesting show today. First of all, Marine Corps is going back to, it looks like, going to increase the number of Marines and Marine rifle squads. That's in the not-too-distant future. That's a good thing. Comdot made that announcement. F-35s have been grounded. You'll hear that in the third hour. They've been directed to check a fuel tube, an internal engine fuel tube. So they'll do that. Again, it's not that I don't think this man losing his life in Turkey is important, but it goes on all the time, right? The Interpol chief is missing in China. The Senate doesn't seem too crazy about that. Why? So I don't understand, I guess, why this is huge news. Because there's video of it? Is that why? And then in the second hour, what you're going to hear is you're going to hear Tyler Jones, former United States Army Ranger sergeant type, and you're going to hear his story. He's from the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. He and a number of his colleagues have started a website called The Freak, right? And you can find that thing, The Freak, F-R-E-Q, media.com. Check it out. No, it's good stuff. So, don't touch that dial. Almarine Radio continues. Don't forget, you can be a disciple of post-traumatic winning. Get smart, all right? And then stick your hand out and help others that need your help, others that whose lives have been touched by trauma. Tell them there's another door that they can't see right now. But there's nothing wrong with them. They're okay. It hurts. It's okay to be damaged. It's okay if it makes you cry, and get used to it. So, if you tell them that, if you tell them it's not going away, you will ease their pain. Because out of the other channel they're hearing, time heals all wounds, there's a purpose in this, and all that stuff does is make you angry and confuses you. So, become a disciple. Learn to preach the gospel. Ease their pain. And that way your trauma gives birth to a better life for you. It gives birth to a better life for them. We call that post-traumatic winning. So, learn it, preach it, help others. It's the better way. Have a great day on a Thursday, Almarine Radio, over and out.